Welcome back to Real Phonies, where we take a love for movies and television and combine it with very little knowledge about movies and television. I'm your host, Christian. Joined with me, as always, are my co-hosts, Joseph.
Yellow.
And Jehu.
Cuckoo!
Talking about a movie that's been out for months. You probably didn't see it. It bombed at the box office. But it's now on Disney Plus, The Marvels.
Yep.
Starring all those people.
Yep.
Brie Larson.
Amon Vellani. Tayana Paris.
Yeah.
And Samuel Jackson.
Samuel Jackson. Tom Hiddleston's wife.
Okay.
That's the bad guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Are there any other famous people in this movie?
I don't
think so. Maybe that guy from the singing planet in Korea.
Right. He wasn't famous to me.
Yeah, but he's like a K-pop star.
Right.
Some kind of somewhat timey-wimey event happens, and the three people with light-based powers, I'm using quotations there, Miss Marvel, Captain Marvel, and Photon, though not called that in the movie, Monica Rambeau, all begin to switch places whenever they use their powers, and they have to figure out how to put it to an end while, I don't remember the bad guy's name.
Yep.
Darbin.
Sure.
Is trying to save Hala from imminent destruction, thanks to Captain Marvel's actions from 30 years ago.
You made it sound more Arabic.
I don't remember.
Hala?
I've never been 100% sure on the pronunciation of that.
I've watched a lot of Dune this week, so Arabic has influenced everything I've read. Directed by Nia DaCosta, who made the Candyman remake.
All right, that's pretty good.
Yeah. What do we think of this movie, y'all?
This was the longest fucking movie I've ever seen. That's not true. It's the longest short movie I've seen since fucking Cocaine Bear. I watched it today, and I kept pausing it, and it kept telling me there was 40 minutes left, and then I unpause it, and I'd watch what I was sure was at least 20 minutes of it, and then it would say I had 39 minutes left.
Yeah.
And that was how I felt about this fucking movie. It bombed for, I don't think it bombed for the right reasons, but it should have bombed, but it should have probably bombed on quality instead of internet bombing.
Jehu?
I thought this movie was fine.
I'm with you. This movie is fine.
I don't think it's anywhere near the top of the Marvel movies, but I also don't think it's at the bottom.
Mm-mm.
I'd say it's maybe the bottom third is probably about where I put it, but it's fine. I enjoyed watching it. I think everybody in it's pretty fun. Yeah, I said this before, but I think this movie bombed because it came out after Barbie. I think, look. I think I'm going to take a second here to try to talk to some dude bros. So if there's any ladies listening, just turn it off right now. I want to talk to you guys because I don't think you all understand that you had it in your fucking hand. Hollywood around 2016 decided that they wanted to sell action movies, superhero movies, dude movies to women. And for some reason, you guys got pissed about that. Why did people get pissed about that? That's the fucking dream. You're a dude. You want to watch women in, like, tight leather outfits. You want to watch shit blow up. Why don't you want to watch those things together? Because fucking Joe Rogan and Kid Rock told you that it was lame? That's fucking stupid. So, like, 2 years from now, when you're having to do the trade-off to watch John Wick 5, you're not going to get to watch Captain Marvel 3 as the trade-off. Instead, you're going to have to watch like a fucking remake of Beaches with Lady Gaga and Tiffany Haddish or something.
That sounds atrocious.
It does sound atrocious. Yeah. And that's what you're going to get. Because, Barbie came along and made all these girls realize, oh shit, we don't even want that.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I always thought the premise was kind of condescending anyway, like Hollywood selling, okay, you know what equality is? Equality is you get dumb action movies too. I think it might have been the greatest trick Hollywood ever pulled.
Mm. Wow.
I like
the idea that there is someone out there that in 2024 is using Kid Rock as their cultural compass.
I think there's a lot of
people out there. So many yeah. people that are doing
that's
that.
Terrifying.
It is. It's awful. Dude, it was awful that that anyone ever did. Do you guys know that Kid Rock got his ass kicked in Pensacola, Florida?
No, I didn't, but I'd like to hear the story.
He was playing a show at the old two-story Sluggos.
Mm.
And to be fair to this dude, he really brought it. at a fucking local show. There was like, for his encore, he'd get in like a fucking coffin and the band had to raise him up to do
it. Kind of cool. You're making Kid Rock sound cooler than he is.
But I don't know who it was who knocked his ass out. Some Sluggo's employee. I want to say Ryan O.D. But he got shitty with somebody at the end of the show and they just laid his ass fucking out. Two hits, hitting him in the face and he hit the ground.
That's a cool story.
Yeah.
I think this movie's fine. I think I'd probably put it on par with, like, the Ant-Man movies. I enjoyed it more than I enjoyed Captain Marvel 1, mostly because I just think Iman Vellani as Miss Marvel, she's at least charming and fun to be on screen. I liked the runtime. It didn't feel long to me. I appreciated that it was, like,
an hour 40. In theory, I love 141. Yeah. You know, that's a great time.
It didn't feel busy. The problem that I have with this movie... is that it's just nothing. Like, the villain is incredibly forgettable. The movie is just riding off the chemistry of those three, and they have good chemistry. Like, that's fine, but, like, content-wise, there's not enough there. The one thing that I think I really connected with, and I wonder, this is my theory, that you hated so much that Jehu might have found it fine, it's a mediocre Star Trek episode.
Oh, yes, that's true.
Like, there is a solid 20 minutes that's trouble with tribbles.
Yeah.
And, like, the whole, like, singing planet bit, that is straight fucking Star Trek.
Well, I never thought of that, but that's great. I don't know if they ever did this on Star Trek, but 100%, having something happen where three characters keep switching places and having to solve problems like that, that is such a Star Trek.
That is very Star
Trek,
yeah.
It's just an hour and a half Star Trek episode. Yeah. And I don't know that that's enough to justify a movie, which I've talked about, what is it, Star Trek Beyond, the third one?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I like that one because it is a Star Trek episode, right? But it feels like it has really big stakes.
Right.
This doesn't have any stakes, and I think that's where, like, the difference is. Where they both might feel like long Star Trek episodes, that one had, like, emotional moments and stakes, and this one's just three chicks having fun through space.
Yeah.
That's fine. Like, that movie deserves to exist,
right?
But, that doesn't mean it was, like, the most gravitating and entertaining watch.
I definitely agree. Villain was weak. You know, most always the Marvel movies are very good at letting you know what the villain wants and getting you to sort of sympathize with him. This is probably the most, like, who gives a shit villain since Thor the Dark
World. I was about to say, I feel like her inspirations were, let me model myself after the two greatest Marvel villains, Christopher Eccleston from Thor the Dark World and Lee Pace in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Just mash those two together. Yeah.
I mean, it is exactly that, actually, because it's... You know, she's carrying on the legacy of one, and then the motivation is the exact same. My people need a place to live.
Yep.
Right.
That's a good point, Joseph.
Yeah.
Christopher Eccleston is pretty fun in Thor the Dark World. That movie's terrible, but he's hamming it up.
Oh, no, he's fine. It just, he does the best what they give him to work with.
Alan Taylor, I couldn't think of it last week, or 2 weeks ago, whatever the fuck I'm talking about.
Yeah,
that's the director of Thor the Dark World.
Yeah, I think the thing I didn't like about this movie is it commits the greatest cardinal sin of just being nothing. It's just boring. it's not like, it's not fun in a good way. It's also not fun in a bad way. It's just time out of my life.
Right.
Yeah.
I also, you say it's three girls having fun in space. I think it's one girl having fun in space, and Brie Larson and Teyonah Paris.
I don't think that's true, because I think this is the most, like, jovial Captain Marvel we've had so far. The only two times we've seen her, she's kind of been a bitch. Oh, like, Captain Marvel 1, she's pissed off all the time, and in Endgame, she's real snarky to everyone all the time. And this one, she's, like, making jokes and kind of humanized a bit. And, I don't know. I think she's having an okay time.
I would agree. I would agree they're both having okay times, which is not a great time for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's. I don't know if this has always been the case or if it's just this movie, but has Captain Marvel's whole thing always just been, like, flying closer to the camera, making rock eyebrows, and, like, canvassing the area? Because that is, like, 30% of her shots in this movie.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. There is a lot of that. I didn't watch Secret Invasion. I'll be the first to admit it.
Yep.
I don't feel like I really missed out why Nick Fury's in space, but I think there's enough backstory for Miss Marvel to where you don't need to watch Miss Marvel. You get enough. You're like, okay, she's does the fist thingy.
I didn't finish this movie and be like, huh, I really wonder what the backstory is.
But there was none of that for Nick Fury. Like, and I think that's a huge mistake of being like, you don't know how he got here, but don't worry, he's here.
Right. So is that, I mean, look, I don't know if there are spoilers for this movie, but do we want to just...
Sure.
Spoilers.
Well, before we leave that, I will say, I tried to watch the first episode of Secret Invasion, and I did it like three times. I just kept like, I'd watch it and then I would just zone off on anything in the room. It's just, I can't even say it's bad. It's just boring.
Yeah.
I know they kill Maria Hill and Ben Mendelsohn.
Yes.
And one of those is a mistake.
Right.
I do
you love How I Met Your Mother.
I do fucking love. I never said Kobe Smulders could act.
Actually, I think killing off Ben Mendo might be the good move, because he's saying he wants to be Doctor Doom.
Yeah, and that would be fine.
Yeah,
I do think the Skrulls I thought were a really cool design in this. They seemed a little more like exaggerated.
Right,
their ears were a little more pointy. And things like that. I thought that was cool.
I kept thinking about what a pain in the ass it would be to be on the makeup for all these things.
For like, sure,
like this movie isn't good. This is taking way too much time.
I think also talking about the villain being bad and just you don't care.
Mm-hmm.
We've done so much homework of making Kree's just total assholes.
Sure.
Right.
That I just can't sympathize for one who's also trying to steal shit and kill people from other planets.
Right.
Like I have a prejudice. I'm a little racist against Kree in the MCU.
Right.
They've only ever been bad
guys.
That's
true.
And now we're just doubling down on it.
Right.
And I don't know if you're supposed to feel sorry, but I don't. I don't care.
Right.
At all.
They also all seem to have gone to the school for generic British villain dumb.
Yeah.
So that doesn't help their case.
Yeah. The problem is there's not much to talk about this movie.
I mean, probably the biggest spoiler is that in the middle of it, it turns into a musical.
Yeah. You know, I love that bit.
That's probably the best bit in the movie. The only thing that annoyed me about this, and I've already said this when I talked about it before, but Miss Marvel's main superpower seems to be lamp shading.
Mm-hmm.
She always tells, oh my God, I can't believe this thing is happening that I'm a super fan of. But when they get to a planet and it turns into Bollywood, she just doesn't mention that.
Yeah.
That annoyed me. Otherwise, she's great.
I don't know. I've never read a Miss Marvel comic, so you can correct me if I'm wrong here. But the way they've written her in the MCU so far, it seems like she's non-fourth wall aware Deadpool.
Sure.
Yes. Yeah, basically, yes. She is a super fan who's now a superhero. They're laying that down exactly like it
is. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I felt like... I liked the ones I didn't like, but it was fine. It didn't bother me. It was more interesting than everything else. The one song... They went to the second song and they cut off the second song like 2 minutes into it, but I wish they had cut it off like 15 seconds into it. That's my only note on that.
Right.
That was one of the things. So this is supposed to be like the real Nick Fury.
Yes.
Okay. Right. I was trying to figure out who's writing lines for fucking Samuel L. Jackson like this, because he is like the perfect amalgamation for most of this movie of like the white girl's gay friend in an Audis rom-com movie and the white guy's black friend in an Audis rom-com movie, which are pretty much the same character, but one's just a little sassier. But I'm like, why are you making the 70-year-old man deliver these lines? Like, he's cooler than this.
I mean, this is the first time I ever did feel like Samuel Jackson was an old man who wasn't quite with it. He didn't feel cool in this movie.
I don't think the lines were doing him any favor.
I mean, I don't, but I also think that Samuel L. Jackson, you know, 5 years ago would have been like, hey, this shit's lame, right?
Maybe,
it's a new shit.
Yeah, that is an interesting point. And he is, he's a whole character is kind of pointless in this movie.
Yeah.
He was in the first Captain Marvel movie, so we feel like we have to.
Right, that's
him.
Exactly why he's back.
Yeah.
I love thinking about the fact that he got to be a Jedi Master with the purple lightsaber just because he asked to be. He was like, this would be pretty cool. And George Lucas was like, okay.
Which is funny, because that Tron picture you sent the other day where he has the triangle, Jared Leto has a triangle identity disc, I'm pretty sure that's also, he was like, well, I want my identity disc to be different. And I fucking hate him for that.
It enraged me. Yeah. That was like the first thing I saw. I was like, why the fuck is it a triangle?
Is that a double standard? Yes, it is.
Now, I'll say it's a little racist. I prefer the black guy getting his way rather than the white guy. Like, it just... Yeah, I think Samuel L. Jackson, one, he loves a paycheck. He wants to be the highest paid actor of all time when he dies. But two, and I don't think it's necessarily like that he's above these things. Like, I don't think he looks down on it. I mean, the guy would make a Mace Windu Disney Plus show tomorrow. Right. He doesn't give a shit how bad the writing is.
Right.
But to the point you made, he might just be too old for it now. Like, right. He might just be past the opportunity to do it.
Right.
I mean, what else? Beast?
I mean, look, fucking Beast. Fuck it, I hate this fucking movie.
You didn't like that bit?
No, it's fucking stupid. Also, the CGI is fucking terrible. Not that that, like, matters that much, but also, like, I don't know, the whole thing just
irritating. I think the design is good, and
I was already in a bad mood by the time I got to that point. It's not that scene's fault. I'm about to remake an enemy out of Sarah Gaucher. We bonded a few weeks ago over our disdain of rich people.
Right.
But I'm getting back on her bad side because I've never been a fan of Goose. I am anti-Goose as a concept.
Well, then you probably really hated this one with a million CGI cats.
I feel like it's such a hack. It's such a hack trick to throw into your movie to be like, I don't think that my movie is good enough. What if we have like a window in window where we just have puppy videos and veterans coming back home so you don't pay attention to the fucking actual shit that's happening on screen? That's pretty much what fucking Goose is, I think. But he's cute, and also it's surprising because he can kill people, and that's funny. I don't know. It sucks to me. I think it's just super cheap.
I feel like, though, you just explained Star Wars.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
You know, like, I mean, I'm not trying to make a fight for Goose here, though I do enjoy Goose. But, I mean, that's what Star Wars is. You've got serious action, and then you've got cute animals and robots for comic relief.
Yeah.
I'm not a big Goose guy because I hate cats. But the whole mechanic of the only way to escape is to let this thing eat you, I thought was funny.
Well, can I say, like, you know, so the moment I realized that, like,
I hate this thing.
The baby Flurkins are going to be the fucking plot device to do whatever the fuck we're doing here. I was, like, angry. I'm, like, arms crossed on the couch. This shit is dumb as fuck. I hate it so much. And then it actually happened, and it was pretty fucking fun.
Yeah, people running away screaming.
It's my favorite part of the movie. Set to cats.
Yeah. Set to memory, right?
Like, the fucking bit where the escape god pod gets launched and all the kittens go into zero G. It's good shit. Yeah. You know what? I'm as cynical as I could get getting into that scene, but I still really enjoyed it.
Yeah. That shit's funny. It's, you know, 3 minutes in an hour and a half movie, but...
I mean, I also think that scene would be really fun in a sold-out theater, and there wasn't any of this.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's true, too. You know what? That scene does seem like something that would happen, and, like, it captures, like, kind of the spirit of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Like, oh...
Right down to the song.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually, talking about that, was thinking while watching this movie... You know, the thing that should have happened was Marvel should have made James Gunn in charge of the cosmic. There should be more cosmic stories in the MCU, and they need one voice for those stories.
Totally.
Like, Ragnarok and kind of tries to do it a little bit. Love and Thunder completely fails at it. And this movie, again, there are moments. There are glimpses. I think the Singing Planet is a good example. Right. The Flurkins is a good example. But a lot of it is just... It misses the mark. It doesn't hit what Guardians does. But they need that unanimous voice across.
Yeah.
And they don't have it anymore.
They don't. This is... Whatever this voice was is not it.
I would still put this movie above Quantumania and Love and Thunder. Of, like, the recent batch of Marvel movies.
I think I'd rather watch Love and Thunder. But
fuck you.
I don't know.
That makes me so mad.
I can tell you, I would rather watch Madam Web twice than rewatch this movie.
Yeah,
at least it went by.
Yeah, your big complaint is that it's nothing. Yeah. At least Madam Web is terrible.
Yeah,
but it's something.
Yeah,
I don't have anything else.
No, I don't have that. I think we've done enough on this one. You have anything else?
Well, I mean, I don't know. What do you think comes of the Beast alternate universe cameo? Set up for Deadpool, or is that set up for?
There won't be Captain Marvel 3. For sure.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. I mean, we've not seen the last of this character.
No, but there won't be a solo movie.
Right.
I think it's Secret Wars.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's going to be worlds colliding.
Yeah.
Various universes fighting each other.
That's how she comes back in our universe.
Yeah.
Again, this was one... I can't remember the last time this happened to me watching one of these movies, but it made me have like a deep inner reflection. On, like, is all of this stupid? Am I stupid for liking any of this? during and the Beast scene was one of those scenes that made me question those things.
I mean, definitely, it does feel like the end credit scene used to be exciting, and now it's just what you got to do.
Yeah.
Well, and I think also they've just become one thing.
Yeah.
Like, this is the same thing as Hercules popping up at the end of fucking right. Love and Thunder, and like, if there's nothing exciting to say, don't say it.
And also, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but since Endgame, we've seen payoff on zero of these.
None of them. Yeah.
You know?
I guess you can make an argument they're all just building the Secret Wars, but
right.
Yeah, it's I was fine with it. It didn't upset me like it did you.
I mean, the thing I liked about it the most is that Kelsey Grammer has been desperate to play Beast again. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm glad he got to do that.
Yeah, he's the perfect voice for it.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good design. I would wish they would have spent a few more hours
sure,
on it.
Sure, yeah.
But I like the look, but we'll see. I don't like, what is, her name? She was in 007. She plays Monica's mom.
Yeah.
What is her name?
I can't remember.
I don't think she's a very good actress. I wasn't excited to see her pop.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, again, it just muddies up the water. Why do you need two of a character that you're still trying to sell one of?
Not doing a great job of it,
right.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
And that's a character I'm a mark for. I'm a mark
for
Yeah,
it's for like, well, yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, that's the Marvels. It's on Disney Plus for free, but I'm still, it's still up to you if it's worth it.
After what I said earlier, I would say if you have like a 12-year-old girl, she will probably love this movie.
Yeah. Oh, we didn't talk about the other thing, setting up Secret or Young Avengers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Sure.
I haven't watched this for like 3 months. But I mean, that's fine. I want Young Avengers to happen. I like both of those people.
Yeah, that's the biggest selling point. They're both fun.
They're both fun. They're both some of the most fun people in the current Marvel universe. Yeah. So,
give me more of those.
Yeah, sure.
That's the Marvels. It's Transformers.
Yeah, it's worse than Transformers for me.
It's definitely shorter.
It is shorter than Transformers.
I'll give it better than Transformers. I had an okay time when I watched it.
0-3. No agreements there.
Mm. Yeah. But that's it for that. What have we been watching the last week or so, guys?
Listen, it's not going to come as a shocker to anyone, but I watched Dune again. Right? In fact, I watched it twice. And once was for research. Once was for myself to be prepared for Dune Part 2.
Right.
And once was because after I finished it, I was like, God, this movie's so good.
Right.
And I just watched it again.
Right.
My wife walked in. She's like, are you watching Dune again? And I was like, yes, I am. That's what I'm doing tonight. I'm watching it 2 days in a row. But I'm going to talk about it. But I'm going to talk about something I haven't talked about. In fact, I'm gonna brag on it a little bit time, which I've never done. And it's not so much the movie itself, but on Denny's version of Dune. Okay. So to accurately say my opinion, I have to give a little backstory, which is when you look at like what Frank Herbert was trying to do with Dune, right? Like one of the central concepts is like humanity was born, human civilization first pops up like 8 to 10,000 years ago. And so what will humanity look like 8 to 10,000 years from now? This isn't like Star Wars where it's just a different group of people. This is us in the future, right? And how is humanity going to be different between here and now? Like, in conceptually, you're closer to the building of the pyramids than you are to Paul Atreides.
Right.
And how fucking different is it going to be? And like, one is we're intergalactic. We've colonized the cosmos, but we don't trust computers and intelligence anymore. But what things are similar? Well, we're still obsessed with philosophy and the intersection between myth and religion, and lower classes are being manipulated by the powerful and extremely wealthy and things like that. Like, those things still stay the same. But the question that the plot kind of resolves on is, if you have a civilization of people who are infinitely more technologically advanced but who do not trust information systems and technology, how do you bridge the gap? And so we make this evolutionary jump with eugenics and space cocaine. So we start making people fuck because we think they're going to make kids who can process numbers really fast. And then we start letting people pilot things by just making them snort cocaine all the fucking time.
Right.
And that doesn't sound interesting when I say it, but it's very interesting. And the one thing, this brings me back to my complaint, the one thing that I think the 80s version of Dune kind of does better is, that's just a fucking weird concept.
Right.
And I'm not sure Denny's is weird
enough.
And the best example I can give is The Navigators. in the old Dune, that's Fincher, right? Like, in Fincher's Dune, a navigator...
Lynch. Yeah. One of the other Davids.
Yeah. Lynch's Dune, a navigator is like a squid person who lives within fucking just spice being pumped in them all the time.
Right.
It just changes their body. But in Denny's, like, you don't see them, but they're still very humanoid in shape and structure. They're just pumping spice into their suit all the time, right? It's just not weird enough.
Right.
Like, at one point, we probably won't get there in the movies, but someone uses spice to fuse their human body with a sandworm, and they become a god-human sandworm thing. And I don't know if we've gotten weird enough in his version to make that believable.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Like, that's what I walked away from it this time, is I just wish it was just a, like... Just turn the knob to 11. Go just a little bit fucking weirder.
Yeah,
like the Harkonnens do it, but that's it.
I agree with that. Like, one of the things I said about the first one is that I didn't feel like the Mentats play a really big part.
Yes.
And there's a reason that they exist, and it sort of explains why the technology is exactly like it is. And they just don't get into that at all. Mm-mm. They show that guy roll his eyes up in his head one time, and then it's done.
Well, and interesting about the Mentats, too, is, and this kind of is, you know, story-wise, I get it, but you have two.
Right.
You kill one.
Right.
And then one, about 45 minutes into the movie, you don't see again.
Right.
And, there's no explanation what the fuck they're doing.
Right.
There's no one to be like, that's a Mentat. He's got a computer brain and shit like
that. Right, right.
No one talks about Paul is also a Mentat.
Right. That never came up. That, if you'll remember when we talked about that. Because that was his big freak out in the tent.
Yes.
Is he realized, oh shit, I'm both a, you know, Bene Gesserit and a Mentat. I'm a freak.
Yeah. What the fuck did you do to me?
Right.
But... He doesn't say what is wrong. At that point, you just think it's the Bene Gesserit.
Right.
Like he only makes the accusation. He only says, you Bene Gesserit witch or whatever. Like,
right.
It's just not... It's fucking great. It's a perfect movie.
Right.
I've watched it so many times. It's just not quite weird enough for me and what I want this series to be. That's it.
Fair enough.
I'm going to talk about a comic this week. Licensed comics have a history of being pretty weak. Even though I'm kind of a fan of them, I sort of got into them as a kid because they seemed to be what was on the newsstand at the Piggly Wiggly. You know, the Piggly Wiggly didn't always have the new episode issue of Spider-Man, but it always had like the adaptation for Buckaroo Banzai or whatever. Or Transformers or G.I. Joe, things like that. But licensed comics are usually... They can be kind of boring because they can't really do anything with him. You can't change James Bond in a James Bond comic because he doesn't belong to you. He belongs to the movies and the books. So there's a new Transformers comic by this artist named Daniel Warren Johnson, who I just love. He did a comic book a few years ago about the Thor supporting character Beta Ray Bill that I loved, and he did a comic book about... professional wrestling called Duo Powerbomb that I just adore. In it, this wrestling tag team wrestles God. It's a super fun comic. So the next thing he was doing was Transformers, and I was like, that's weird, because this guy is sort of like an auteur. He's sort of guy who can completely make comics himself. So I bought the first issue when it came out, which was 5 months ago, and it just fucking blew me away. It's so goddamn good. He conveys better than any other format has the how just insane it would be for a semi truck to run into a 30-foot robot. It just looks so cool. He writes such a great Optimus Prime. There's a scene in the second issue that looks like it's going to be played for laughs, which is Optimus Prime is chasing Starscream and he steps on a deer. But then he goes back and sees what he did, and it makes him realize that life on this planet is fragile, and even in trying to protect them, he has to be careful. It's the real Optimus Prime. It's not the murder guy from the Bay movies. It's the guy you want him to be. Also, the artist's fandom of professional wrestling really comes in here. There's a lot of giant robots doing suplexes on each other, and it's pretty fucking
great. That sounds pretty good.
So we're up to issue 5 on it now, one more issue in the arc, and I've just loved every issue more than the one before. It's, I guess why I'm so surprised by this is that, again, it's a licensed comic. It's about Transformers. And I should say Image Comics just got the Transformers and G.I. Joe license, and they're basically trying to do the same thing that Rise of the Beast tried to set up, whereas they're trying to make G.I. Joe and Transformers one thing, mm-hmm. that sort of, and this, you know, obviously we haven't seen much of that yet, but if they do it, they really need to take their cues from this, because they do such a good job of why G.I. Joe's origin is tied to the Autobots, mm-hmm. why Cobra's origin is tied to the Decepticons. And also at the end of the first 5 have all been just first wave Transformers. So I really wasn't expecting to see anybody beyond that. But then at the end of issue 5, fucking Devastator shows up. Pretty excited about it. Also, I think a thing I love about it is, you know, this guy doesn't have the whole cast there. He has sort of a hodgepodge of characters. And I bet they're just the ones he had toys of as a kid. Also, he kills Bumblebee in the first issue.
Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, headshot kills Bumblebee, and basically Cliffjumper becomes the Bumblebee of this story. But yeah, Image Comics, new Transformers comic. Way better than Transformers. Highly recommend it.
Cool. Let's see, what did I do this week? I just rewatched Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, because it's on Hulu and Google kept
selling it. I watched that recently, too.
Yeah. It's a good fucking time.
It is such a good fucking time.
I mean, it's definitely, it is the movie Quentin Tarantino made for Quentin Tarantino. More than any other one, for sure.
Also, this is the first time I had watched it since Austin Butler became a thing, so I was surprised to see it.
Yeah, sure. Also, Sydney Sweeney's in this movie.
Yeah. Same spot.
Yeah. It is funny. I was trying to figure out. There's something about it. The first time I watched it, I remember there being like a lot of tension.
Right.
Particularly like any time we're with like the Manson family, we've been on Spawn Ranch, or anytime they're just kind of like milling about doing whatever they're doing. And the second time I watched it, like I didn't feel that.
Right.
I mean, especially the Spawn Ranch one, because I know fucking Bruce Dern is alive.
Right.
Spoiler alert.
Right.
And I was trying to figure out, because I've also recently rewatched Inglourious Basterds, and I don't have that problem with Inglourious Basterds. Like, the tense scenes are still tense.
Right.
And I do genuinely think it might be because in Inglourious Basterds, a lot more of those tense moments resolve in violence.
Right.
Yeah.
So even though I know it's coming, and even though watching the scene, I know when it's going to happen, and it's not like, you know, not yet. Still, you know, it's like the Alfred Hitchcock, you know, like the difference between surprise and tension is like the bomb under the table. Like, I know it's coming,
right.
And that makes the scene feel heavier somehow. Again, I still really enjoyed it. I think it's a great time. Leo's so funny. we don't appreciate that about Leo enough. His best two roles are fucking Wolf of Wall Street and this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I will say, I think one of the reasons why there's also no tension the second time you watch it is at that point there's no way to just even conceive that Brad Pitt would ever be in danger.
Yeah.
He's just too cool to ever be in danger. And yeah, Leo's just so fucking great. The freak out he has when he's acting, I just fucking love
it. It's the best. Anyway, better than Transformers. Easy watch on Hulu. The other thing that I'll talk about is not that I need to get Christian into any other actual play D&D things, but if you'll remember a long time ago when Critical Role was on a break for COVID, I think, I dove into the Adventure Zone, which got me onto My Brother and My Brother and Me, which I am now a religious listener of. The first arc, first campaign of the Adventure Zone is their most famous one, that's called Balance. It's excellent. And they've had many more campaigns since then. I have attempted to listen to a couple, haven't gotten into them. It never quite recaptures the same magic. But they recently started a new campaign that's called Adventure Zone versus Dracula. And it's just, they play 3 characters that are going to kill Dracula. And, you know, it's a fanciful kind of gothic monster-y
like their version world. Of Strahd.
Yeah, sort of thing. but it's very fun. My favorite thing about that show is, so my brother and me is the three brothers, and you know, they're not necessarily like comedians per se, but you know, they're like, they have drama degrees, they're all funny, they're performers, you know, right. That's like their thing. They come on that show and they're all performing, and they come on this show and they're all performing, but they also do this show. It's the three brothers and their dad. And their dad is just a dad. And that's my favorite fucking thing about it, is because, I mean, not that I imagine he's a dad that's more willing than most, because I can't imagine getting my dad to sit down to do this kind of thing. But, you know, everybody else at the table is like, kind of like in it.
Right.
And like, you know, trying to move a story along, and kind of like, you know, the dungeon master's throwing hints at the players, and the players are trying to work those hints at like, figure out what the story is, and the dad is just doing fucking anything that comes through his mind at any moment, and it's incredible. It's the best thing. I love it so much. Also, Griffin, who's the brother who DMs, writes all the music, and the music for this one slaps. So, anyway, Adventure Zone versus Dracula, better than Transformers.
Good deal.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what to say for next week, because I don't know what order these things are going to come out, but next week, something. Maybe Dune, maybe we already did that. If we did that, something else.
Yep.
Well, thank you everybody for listening. Please rate and subscribe. Tell your friends about the podcast. If you want to get in touch with us, you can reach out. Real funny. We haven't gotten an email in a while, guys. Tell us what's going on.
Email us.
I know. I don't care what it is.
Joseph he's really sexist for hating the Marvels.
That's fine. You can reach us at realphonies@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter @realphonies, on Instagram @real_phonies. Thanks to Zach Evans for art and Brian Velasquez for our theme. We'll see you guys later.